Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Dismantling Injustice. We are wrapping up our series on mental health and communities of color with the conversation with Kara Page, a Black, queer, feminist, cultural memory worker, and organizer. For the past 30 years, Kara's organized at the intersections of racial, gender, and economic justice, as well as transformative justice. She's the founder of Changing Frequencies, a co-founder of Healing Histories Project, and she's the co-author of a new book that's coming out in just a couple of weeks, Healing Justice Lineages, Dreaming at the Crossroads of Liberation, Collective Care, and Safety. It's going to be released next month, I believe February 7th. And I just have to say, our conversation with Kara was truly transformative for me, because we hear a lot about this idea of healing justice and how it applies to abolition and to our collective liberation. But honestly, I, you know, had trouble grappling with healing justice as a concept. I really didn't quite understand it. And Kara does a great job at breaking it down for us. So when we come back, we'll be joined by Kara. Welcome to the podcast, Kara.
Yes, an honor to be here. Thank you so much, Carol.
So could we start by having you tell us a bit about yourself and how you became so deeply committed to healing justice?
Yes, my pleasure. So I have been a Black queer organizer, cultural memory worker, and curator of spaces around healing and transformation for over 30 years or so. And I came into healing justice, I just want to say, by way of the lineages of what I call liberatory practice of our movements. So let me just say a little bit about that. I am a child that grew up during the Reagan-Bush era, during the AIDS epidemic, and really witnessed this groundswell of Black, Indigenous people of color organizing, women, queer and trans people, organizing against the state while all of these things were going on in the world around me in the 70s and 80s. So by the time I really started to get into my own organizing, political organizing, and came out as a Black queer organizer, what I saw or came into was reproductive, what was called health at that time, but what would become eventually reproductive justice, is really working on how do we find and fight for bodily autonomy, and also dipping into in and out of the harm reduction movement that came out of the AIDS epidemic as a response to the economic upheaval of displacing Black and brown people, queer and trans, from quality care, because we were seen as expendable during that epidemic. And I want to give props here to Saving Our Own Lives, a Liberatory Practice of Harm Reduction, just dropped a book by Shir Hassan that really talks about that transformative time and moment in movement. But what all that set up for me was a path towards understanding the role of care when it is community-led and when we do not wait for the state to respond for our own political, spiritual, physical, emotional well-being. So by the late 90s, I was living in the US Southeast, organizing, creating cultural work, and fighting against anti-Black racism, homophobia, anti-immigration. Post 9/11, with the rise of fascism and surveillance and policing, as all these movements I was a part of saw everything getting stripped away, I was witnessing immense burnout, immense grief, sheer exhaustion from continuing to lose our freedom fighters and lose campaigns. Not all loss, but you know, it was a hard moment, just like now, right? Where you're watching things just fall apart. And so understanding the role that liberatory movements had used care strategies, I wanted to understand it. How did the Black Power Movement, Yellow Power Movement, American Indian Movement, Asian student at Latinx movement use the opportunities to build traditions of care as integral to political liberation, which led me to co-founding the Kindred 7 Healing Justice Collective in 2005, 2006, And then us wrestling with, as a collective of health healer, cultural worker organizers, what is the role of collective care? And how do we build a strategy that it's not just healing for healing's sake, but the political obligation in some ways that liberatory practice needs a way to talk about the immense trauma, fear, and grief that comes with slavery, genocide, and colonization. So we started to craft Healing Justice, which is a community-led response to interrupt, transform, and intervene on individual collective trauma that will sustain our emotional, physical, emotional, spiritual, psychic, environmental well-being.
Wow. I'm not religious, but amen to everything you said. And it's interesting you bring this up, because over the last month, we've been talking to folks that do work around the criminalization of mental health and just the need for mental health resources for immigrant communities, Black communities, and other communities of color.
Yes.
You know, there's another piece of this conversation, though, and that's just like the well-being of folks on the ground that are doing change-making work. So the organizers, the healing of the healers, the well-being of the healers.
That's right. That's right.
You know, the folks that, as you talk about, are there, you know, doing that mutual aid work and really serving our communities. For many, including myself at some points during my life, the high stress and trauma to both burnout, but also serious chronic disease. And it could take a toll on one's mental health, and, you know, that kind of spills over into other aspects of their lives. The response to this, and I can't tell you how many conferences I've been to, how many workshops I've seen about self-care and invest in self-care. Mm. And part of me appreciates it, because I think we tend to take on the burden of everyone. And, you know, at a certain extent, we do need to take care of ourselves. But
yes,
the model of self-care that's being discussed, you know, it could often come off as capitalistic.
Yes.
You did a good job of defining healing justice, but also, why is it different from capitalistic forms of self-care?
It's about how do we honor different ways of being in our bodies and living our lives that really evaluates the economy of healthcare in this country that has never centered our political, spiritual, cultural autonomy, has never asked us how do we want to be cared for, and has never put a relationship to understanding schools of thought around medicine and care strategy are deeply embedded in eugenic ideas, colonialist ideas of what the body is for. Slavery, labor, production, right? And then if you're bringing in white supremacy, you're bringing in gender supremacy, youth supremacy and adultism, we can go on and on. But understanding the relationship of care to economy is self-care, right? It's like this idea that we should again be individualized to preserve one person's idea of self-care that somehow has no relationship to community, has no relationship to political liberation, has no relationship to how that one person's body is actually related to a community's experience of how we may have been policed by this idea of what is perceived as healthy, right? And if we're not wrestling with that, self-care is a very apolitical, it's necessary, right? Yes, take care of yourself, but it is not a political strategy. It is not a systems changing strategy. Healing justice is different. Self-care has been very much based on the preservation of one body. This idea of the healthy body being white, cis, male, Christian, wealthy, and able-bodied, right? And so healing justice asks the question, how do we have the multiplicity, honor the layers of all kinds of bodies that often, as people of color, as disabled people, as queer and transgender nonconforming, as migrant and refugee people, we as poor people, we are already entering into a system of care that devaluates our existence, that tells us if we are not producing for the wealthy elite, that we actually are expendable, and care doesn't matter if it's not related to the dollar of an economy, right? It raises the question, how do we reclaim our definition of collective care, mutual aid, and an understanding of how we will take care of each other as an interdependence, and understanding that if we are only trying to preserve certain people to be well, instead of thinking about how are we all taken care of, right? So what are the mechanisms we can put in place, right, that engage us to have conversations on what is care? How do I care for you? How do you care for me? And how do we do this together? So that is a liberatory practice that is based on understanding discrimination, displacement, oppression has deeply informed our illness, our disease, our wellness. And if we're not wrestling with that, then we're not looking at the role of state in relationship to how we literally feel in our collective bodies based on stress, trauma, grief, and war.
You know, as you've mentioned, like we are, you know, the goal should be like our collective liberation.
Yes, it should. Building power for our well-being, our power, our liberatory existence. Yes.
And so like, I guess one question I had is, so do you believe that healing justice is necessary for, you know, an abolitionist future? And then vice versa, is abolition necessary for healing justice?
Right. I don't think healing justice cannot exist without abolition. It's actually a mechanism towards abolition, right? The more we can imagine or reimagine ways we can build care strategies that do not rely on state institutions of punishment, harm, and torture, like prisons and like the medical industrial complex, not all medicine, but systems that have used medicine and science to weaponize and criminalize against our certain communities because we are seen as I said, expendable, right? As queer and trans, Black and brown. One case in point, this, if we're going to have a quick display of what this looks like, abolition to me needs to look like that we are imagining our relationship to people, to migrant communities that doesn't put them back in cages, right? And here we are moving, you know, forcibly moving people from who are coming in across borders, I call them false borders, government, right borders, coming in and being shipped here to New York City, right? And being put on Roosevelt Island. And Roosevelt Island actually, historically, in the 1800s, was used for containment by wealthy elites that wanted to move and institutionalize poor communities that they perceived as criminals. Roosevelt Island started out as an island to put people that they thought, quote, were diseased and insane. Here we are like 100 years later, we're in the 21st century. So from 1839, when that was a practice, and they built the first New York City public-funded lunatic asylum, right? Then here we are in 2023, moving migrants to that island to house them there. The irony, the epitome of that, and I couldn't respond fast enough, Carl, to say, wait, is anyone making the link here that we are doing this again? We are repeating the harms, the state is repeating the same harms and abuses and calling this for their well-being, right? So I want to say carefully and cautiously that healing justice can exist if we are not compliant with state institutions that continue to harbor what they consider to be wellness or care, which actually repeats the same harms and abuses, but and until we build new systems of care or honor and build and imagine traditions of care that do not repeat these systems, I can't tell you that healing justice shouldn't exist until we've abolished all these institutions. I need us to do both. Abolish while we're building.
Yeah, and that's an uphill battle there, getting this
across
to those folks.
That's right.
Because they don't, you know, arguably they don't see themselves as healers. They don't see themselves as healing.
Agreed. But I think that's changing. I will say during the COVID pandemic, what I saw was social workers, nurses, some doctors coming together to organize and say, wait a minute, the global pandemic is actually endemic of something much larger inside of systemic oppression. And how have I been used as a tool of using medicine to isolate, criminalize, weaponize against poor people, Black and brown, queer and trans, disabled people? Let me step back and see my role and how this can be critiqued and what can we do differently so that we're not implicitly and explicitly recreating harms and abuses, right? And so one example is the Shut Down Irwin campaign. I don't know if you know. Yes, okay. So here we are in the 21st century watching the sterilization of immigrant women in a detention center, but having a nurse, Dawn Wooten, step up and say, no, absolutely not. I will not be complicit. She set the bar, right? Every nurse, every doctor inside a detention center or prison needs to be able to say, I will not be a part of this and participate in this and take that risk, right? But what will it mean for them to also be safe? Because Dawn has been targeted and surveilled, and it is indicative of how people will throw you away when you speak the truth.
Yep, that's, yeah, and we've seen that time and time again throughout history, and that's something that, you know, that continues to this day, even if we don't hear about it. So then bringing it more to, like, the level of the average person, I guess I'd say, what would you say are some strategies from the healing justice framework that our listeners can use to contribute to collective care and healing within themselves and in their own communities?
What healing justice can look like on the ground is beginning to ask, what can collective care or interdependent care look like? How would we define it for ourselves and each other? And I usually don't separate out collective care and safety, right? What mechanisms would we need in place to feel safe to walk into a clinic, to feel safe to be seen by a doctor? Where do we have the advocacy and the support from each other to say, I will go with you to make sure you are treated with respect and dignity, no matter your gender, sexuality, race, ethnicity, immigrant status, mm-hmm. right? Disability, what are we asking for? So baseline, a very simple practice is, what does collective care even look like for my community, my family, chosen family, birth family, and where will we build mechanisms and put those in place to take care of each other? An example, I just got a call out from Asian communities across the country to hold grief in this moment of these mass shootings. And the question always is, where are our people? How will we honor and take care of Asian people that are holding mental health, violence, survivorship in their lives? And how will we hold our people when they are in struggle, when they are in emotional crisis? And so I think there's another piece here where people are starting to map in their communities, who are the providers we trust that we can lean on when a crisis occurs? And the state is not the first response they will choose. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm meeting with people of color, social workers who don't always want to use mandatory reporting because that further criminalizes and isolates Black and brown people. So they're looking at alternative strategies. This is the kind of work we need to imagine in terms of using healing justice as a tool for transformation. I hope that this gives some fodder for what's possible.
No, it definitely does. Yeah, you know, and so like I've known you for a few years, and I know you as, you know, as an organizer, as a movement leader, but you're also obviously a healer, but you're also very much an educator. And I appreciate the way that you're able to break down something like healing justice, which, you know, honestly, for folks, it can be amorphous. And I think it's because people sort of use healing justice, you know, interchangeably for things that Agreed. Might You know, like that might involve healing, but not justice. And that's why I was excited to learn that you were coming out with a book about healing justice. And I know you're going to be breaking it down for folks. And so can you just talk to us a little bit about your book that's forthcoming?
Absolutely. And one, I want to say it's called Healing Justice Lineages, Dreaming at the Crossroads of Liberation, Care, and Safety. And it's co-written and edited with my dear comrade and friend, Erica Woodland. He is the founder of the National Queer and Trans Therapist of Color Network and a visionary in healing justice. We did it as an anthology. So we've also invited other fantastic contributing editors, writers, who are organizers doing healing justice work on the ground in movement. And I will say healing justice for us has lost its way, right? It started in the South as a political strategy to build movement in the South, very connected to global South and Black Southern radical traditions of care. Then as it moved into a national realm, some people took it and we said, well, do with it what you need to. The Kindred Collective, we don't own this. This is part of lineages of traditions of care that happened when our ancestors were surviving slavery and attempted genocide. This is just a strategy to politicize the role of care. And then we saw people take it and use it in different ways. We're like, wait a minute, you're not using the intention of what we meant it to be. And so the purpose of this book is to reground. And again, the framework can evolve, but we want people to know the initial intention. So this book really shows the arc of how liberation movements in the 60s and 70s used care as integral to political liberation, how we are now seeking to use healing justice as a way to build power and liberation, and that care is not isolated from systems changing work. It is merely a mechanism, a tool, a strategy to transform ways we think about, right, our collective care and what it means, what it will look like to get free. How will we still treat each other with dignity, respect, and care as we build this? And then our future. This book really leans into the future of what is possible, including disrupting the medical industrial complex and fighting for abolition. That is what this book is in a nutshell, and you can buy it. It's on pre-sale now. Go to northatlanticbooks.com. And to learn more about it, please keep an eye out and join us on Instagram, HJ Lineages.
That's so amazing. And I just, you know, I can't wait for the book. I know that it's definitely going to be informative. I've had a chance to be in many sessions facilitated by Erica, and I can say she is so sharp and so great. And so, you know, I'm super excited. Like, you know, it's like two superheroes joining forces. But Kara, thank you so, so much for joining our podcast. I know our listeners are going to learn a lot. You know, again, we encourage everyone to go out and get the book and really learn, you know, not just learn what healing justice is, but, you know, learn how you can begin to apply it to your own life and in your community. And I think it's just super important, especially for folks that identify as abolitionists, to begin to adopt healing justice. Healing justice is one of the tools, both a tool that will get us toward abolition, but also a tool that we will practice.
That's right.
When we reach abolition. So
that's right. That's right. From one superhero to another, thank you so much for your work and vision for building abolition and building collective power for our people.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kara. And listeners, thank you for joining us. Until we're all free, peace out.
Thanks again for joining us. Dismantling Injustice is brought to you by Envision Freedom Fund, an organization that works to transform the immigration and criminal legal systems while meeting the critical needs of individuals impacted by these systems daily. To learn more about our work and donate, visit us at envisionfreedom.org. That's envisionfreedom.org. Dismantling Injustice was created by Sally Israel. Our executive producer is Abigail Wolf. This podcast is produced and engineered by Yasi Solutions and hosted by Carl Hammett Lipscomb. That's me. Special thanks to the team at Envision Freedom for being amazing. Until we're all free, peace out.